Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
America, welcome to the Inside Scoop on Washington. I'm your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. Remember me? Well, hopefully 90% of you do. For those of you who may have joined the show in the last 3 months in 2016, you may not remember me. I am the regular host that fills this 3 p.m. time slot, and I'm glad to be back, and I want to thank Leslie Marshall for filling in for me while I was gone. I was busy off doing very important things, namely as an elected state representative, a delegate in the Virginia House of Delegates. I had to go down to the state capitol in Richmond, Virginia, and be a legislator for the last 3 months, and I'm going to share with you later on, not today, as time goes on, some of my experiences there. And let you know what it's like to be a minor league politician, which is, I guess, what I am. So I had to go and I had to do my work and I couldn't do my show. But Virginia is, I think, unusual in that it still has this citizen legislator ideal. I think in most states in the United States today, in state legislators, it's a full year job. And actually, in many ways, to be a delegate in the Virginia House of Delegates is a full-time job. I assure you, I'm not done just because I'm back home from Richmond, Virginia. I certainly am going to functions for seniors and labor and NARAL and gun control advocates and I'm just trying to think of all the things on my schedule because there's a lot of them. I went to a firefighters thing. Chamber of Commerce, leadership awards, Democratic Party functions. Child abuse prevention, at least 8 other things I've got on the schedule for this week. It is busy, but we don't pass laws during most of the year. We actually only pass laws from January to March, unless the governor calls a special session, which is rare, though it can happen. And then we go back for one day in April after the governor signs or vetoes legislation to decide whether or not to override the veto. But that's it. And then we go back to our regular jobs for 9 months out of the year. And I'm glad to be back here at my regular job talking with you folks. And again, I hope you missed me. I'd love to hear from some regular callers at 888-653-7543. And if you've never heard me before, you definitely want to call in today on this topic. Because today, I'm issuing a profound thank you to Donald Trump. No, don't change that dial. No. Yes, this is still Mark Levine. This is still a progressive radio station. No, I'm not that jerk Mark Levin. Don't ever confuse me with him, by the way. I have a second E in my name. It stands for empathy, which the other guy lacks. So it's a good way to keep the two of us apart. But I, nonetheless, as a progressive Democrat, as a solid liberal, as a proud liberal, and as a supporter of Hillary Rodham Clinton, I do want to thank the Donald. I want to thank the Donald for exposing the Republican Party for what it is. I could not have imagined 1 year ago today, just 1 year ago today, the amount of hypocrisy and truth that Donald Trump could expose. Now, I know Donald Trump is a big consummate liar, but listen close here. What he exposed was the truth of the Republican Party. Now, I've been fighting the Republican Party for, 20 years or so. Not long before I was a politician, I was a radio host and TV pundit. And before that, I was legislative counsel to Congressman Barney Frank on Capitol Hill. And before that, I was a citizen activist, someone who marched in protests and called my congressmen and my state legislators all the time. And actually, I wrote legislation on issues I cared about as a lawyer long before I even went to Washington to work for Barney Frank. So going up against the Republican Party is something that I've done well all my life. And yet, the Republican Party has gotten progressively worse. The Republican Party used to be a bunch of people who I just disagreed with, who had different values from my own, and sought to use the political process to advance their values, much as I seek to use the political process to advance progressive values. I used to respect the Republican Party. It used to be, like they call in the British Parliament, the honorable opposition. Or they might consider us the honorable opposition. We all know that Ronald Reagan and Speaker of the House Tip O'Neill used to go out for drinks. And even though they disagreed on most things, they could actually get together and hammer out compromises. And if you look at all the anger in America, of which Donald Trump definitely represents a good part of it, it has to do with, well, Republicans and Democrats fighting each other all the time. But more specifically, I think it has to deal with Republicans no longer believing in this experiment we call the United States of America. No longer supporting their country ahead of their party. No longer supporting the Constitution ahead of their power. No longer wanting to present their ideas truthfully in a fashion for the American people to choose between, but all about working behind the scenes in very sneaky ways to gain and obtain and consolidate power, and to do so as far out of the glare of the American people as possible. I'll give you some examples in a minute. But the question always was, how do they do it? How do they do it? How do Americans, whom they're harming, the Americans particularly in the working class, the Americans who are struggling to get by, the Americans in the middle class, people who are the working poor, people who are trying to get on that first rung of the ladder of the American dream, they constantly got kicked off the rung by Republicans. And the question was, well, why are working class people, particularly working class white people, voting for Republicans? Well, Donald Trump has answered that question. He has used ancient American subtexts that have been around, well, since before our founding, racism, xenophobia, misogyny, hatred of the other, and he's used it masterfully to get ahead in the Republican Party, showing that a poor white guy, not all poor white guys, obviously, but some poor white guys, mostly poor white men, will put their race and maybe their gender ahead of their own economic needs. Now, this is as old as American history. If you're someone who've listened to my show for, and I've been on the air now for 13 years now. Wow, 13 years. But even if you just listened to me last year, you know, I like to talk about history. I think historical examples illustrate a point very well, because I don't think we change that much. I don't think Donald Trump is that different from the Know-Nothing Party of the 1830s and 40s, the party that specifically hated intellectuals, hated the elite, and hated immigrants. And in fact, when asked what they know, what they stand for as a party, the standard response was, I know nothing. That was the way to keep their party secret. It also, let's face it, is a solid anti-intellectual thing to do. And when you think of people who know nothing, you got to think of Donald Trump and his supporters. Right? I mean, he has no concern for any particular policy. He'll change his mind on abortion 6 times in 5 days. We'll get to that, by the way. I'm very thankful, by the way, that Donald Trump, for Donald Trump's position on abortion, and I'll tell you why a little bit later in the hour. But the point is that poor white men have been tricked by elites into not supporting their own interests for hundreds of years. One of my favorite examples, and one which I really like to expose because I guess nobody else talks about it, is during the American Civil War. Look at Donald Trump's support, and you'll see it's very, very strong in the South among uneducated and lower income white male voters. That's where Donald Trump is at his peak. Well, lower income, uneducated, white male soldiers were the main foot soldiers of the Confederacy. The rich white guys who owned slaves and who declared secession in Virginia and Mississippi and South Carolina and the other southern states, they didn't fight the wars. That's something most Americans don't know. Three quarters of white Southerners, this is something that surprises a lot of people, three quarters of white Southerners before the Civil War did not own a single slave.
What?
But they strongly supported slavery. And even in the remaining quarter, the vast majority of them, white people, owned one or two slaves. But the big plantation heads, the, well, let's face it, George Washington's or Thomas Jefferson's or their ilk, people down below, the people who had hundreds of slaves, the rich white guys, they didn't even have to fight in the war. Yes, there was a draft, but it didn't apply if you were very rich. There was even something called, and I'm not making this up, folks, you can look it up, there was even something called the 20 Negro Rule. And the 20 Negro Rule said that if you were a white man and you owned 20 or more slaves, you didn't even have to fight in the Confederacy. The poor white guys were drafted. You could stay home and watch your plantation, lest the slaves revolt, I guess. So poor white men have been fighting and dying for rich white men for hundreds of years, and doing so for racist reasons for hundreds of years. Because as much as it harmed them, they could always believe they were better than someone else. And this psychological belief that you are better than someone else, that you are better than, that a poor white guy is better than a black person, or a Muslim, or an immigrant, or some other person who's different in some way, shape, or form. This psychological need to feel superior to someone is stronger even than a person's economic interests. And those are the people that support Donald Trump. And what Donald Trump has exposed is the gulf between the leadership of the Republican Party, you can think of them as a southern plantation class, the people who mistreat all poor people, not just blacks and immigrants. He's shown the disconnect between them and the Republican base. Thank you, Donald Trump, for exposing that. I'm going to talk more about that all this hour. If you want to call in and join the show, please do. 888-653-7543. This is Mark Levine. Be right back right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. In an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. I am thanking Donald Trump today. I know that sounds a little unusual for someone, progressive like me, but I am thanking Donald Trump. Donald Trump, who has exposed the Republican establishment for what it is, a bunch of hypocrites who believe in nothing, who are owned by those who pay for them, and who will do anything to retain power. They don't care about the poor white people who they've been using dog whistles to convince that everything Democrats do is for the other. That's been the Republican mantra, right? They don't usually say it publicly. They say it through dog whistles, through euphemisms, through hint, hint, wink, wink, nod, nod. Oh, Democrats, they're just for blacks. They're just for immigrants. They're just for Latinos. They're just for gay people. They're just for women. They don't care about you, poor white man. They don't care. When actually, when you look at Democratic proposals, everything from proposals to increase the minimum wage to the Affordable Care Act to, virtually everything Democrats do. You know, making it easier to go to college, programs so that people can actually get easier loan rates if they're a small business. All these things help middle class and middle income people, not to mention Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid expansion. But the Republican establishment has taught Republicans for a long time, mostly using dog whistles, this isn't really helping you. So here's the problem. A bunch of people actually believed it. And Donald Trump, to his credit, doesn't use dog whistles, doesn't use euphemisms, doesn't use wink, wink, nod, nod, hint, hint. He just says the openly racist things that a lot of the Republican base is thinking, showing the clear divide between the establishment that uses these code words and the base that doesn't need the code words. But the establishment doesn't care about the base, and the base really is suffering because working class people of all races and stripes have been hurting, largely from the policies of George W. Bush, who started the policy of giving massive tax cuts to the rich. Some of it goes back to Ronald Reagan. And some of it President Obama has not been able to fix. Admittedly, the economy is great under President Obama. The unemployment rate is down to 5% or even a little bit less. You find the deficit is going down year after year. Inflation is low. Indeed, the combination of unemployment and inflation, which Ronald Reagan used to call the misery index, is probably the lowest it's been since the 1950s. But the only thing that hasn't improved is working class wages. And every time Democrats try to raise the minimum wage, try to do something like the Affordable Care Act to take the expense of health care out of the problems of working class people, to try to provide affordable housing or family medical leave or anything like that, Republicans say, that's just to help other people. It's not to help you. But the answer is the Republican establishment has been playing the base for years, using xenophobia, using racism to get them to do what they wanted, which is massive tax cuts and helps to their interests. So Donald Trump has actually exposed them. These are people who will do anything depending on what the Koch brothers or whomever pays their bills tell them to do. Look at the fact that right now they won't even follow the United States Constitution, which every one of those politicians is sworn to uphold. Constitution says that the Senate shall advise on consent on judicial nominees, and Republicans say, nope, we're not going to do it. Now, notably, there's never been a Senate in the entire history of the United States through Depression, Civil War, you name it, that has refused to at least consider a Supreme Court nominee. There have been some that have been accepted, some that have been rejected. Never before has one not been considered, but they don't care about the Constitution. They just want to retain power. So, Donald Trump, thank you for exposing the Republican establishment. Thank you for exposing at least half of the Republican base as being racist xenophobes who hate science and knowledge and intellect. Really the poster children for the movie Idiocracy, if you've ever seen it. People who are downright, they're not just anti-elite, they're anti-knowledge, anti-science. So thank you for exposing that. And also thank you for exposing the real pain of the working class. Whether they be liberal or conservative, the trade and corporate policies that have harmed them. So yes, thank you, Donald Trump. I really hope you win the Republican nomination. And I look forward to Hillary Clinton beating you in the fall. This is Mark Levine. I'll be right back with your calls after this.
Back to the Aggressive Progressive, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. The phone number is 888-653-7543. I'm talking about why I'm thanking Donald Trump. Now, you know, don't get me wrong. Don't actually pretend that I respect him. I certainly don't. But I'm amazed that one man could do this much damage to the Republican Party. And he's done it mostly simply by exposure. Underneath all his antics, and I don't think, by the way, he's doing it to expose the Republican Party. It'd be really cool if he were some Manchurian candidate, right? Some secret liberal, which some have accused him of, just trying to destroy the Republican Party. I just think he's a big megalomaniac blowhard who entered the race mostly to promote his own businesses because he knew he'd get a lot of press, and so he'd get more people coming to Trump hotels and Trump whatever businesses, Trump University, that fraud, so forth. And never in a million years dreamed he would get more than 2-3% of the vote. And then when he did, he kind of reminds me of the dog that caught the car, right? You know, dogs chase cars all the time. But when the car stops and the dog runs and catches the car, the dog doesn't know what to do. He barks a lot. He's like, "Whoa, the chase is fun. I don't want a car." Well, that's how Donald Trump feels about the presidency. That's why now that they're actually talking to him about issues, he's flummoxed. He doesn't know where to go or what to say. I'm just a little worried he's peaking too soon, and I want him to go on and win the nomination. So go, Donald, go. The other thing I'm really glad that he's doing is he's exposing the authoritarian tendencies that some in America have always supported. Now, I don't think it's the majority of Americans. I'm not even sure it's the majority of Republicans. It may be half of Republicans. But let's face it, there were a lot of Americans that supported George Wallace, the segregationist candidate for president in the 1960s, or Joe McCarthy. People who don't want someone who has policy concerns. They want a strong man who thinks and acts tough. That's why some people compare Donald Trump to Mussolini, because there's a certain element that just wants a authoritarian strongman. Look at the caudillos, if you will, the Latin American dictators that rule through strength and corruption and authoritarianism. So I think it's important that Americans realize that there is a certain group that's here and that they're almost all in the Republican Party. And the people need to understand that this is what the Republican Party has been for the last 10, 20 years, increasingly so year after year, becoming a party that uses these authoritarian, racist, xenophobic tendencies among at least half of its base to support candidates that then go and harm that base, take money from corporations, put it in their pockets, and go and do tax cuts for the rich, things that don't help most of their uneducated white males who vote for them. So Donald Trump has done an amazing job in exposing the fraud at the heart of the Republican Party. And for that, I want to thank him. I think he's done a good job. All right, let's get to your calls at 888-653-7543. Helen in Ithaca, New York, on line 2. How are you, Helen?
Good afternoon. Welcome back to the radio waves.
I'm glad to be back. I've had a lot to say, as you can imagine. I've been gone for 3 months.
I've been hearing it, yeah. Like the old trick here, divide and conquer. You know, working class people, we got to get everybody to hate each other.
It is an old trick.
Hispanics, whites, blacks, you all have to hate each other. You have the same common interest.
It is an old trick. And as I point out, it's as old as at least the Civil War. Well, even older, because the Know-Nothing Party predated the Civil War. The Civil War, the rich white planters got poor whites who didn't own slaves to oppose the poorest of the poor, the worst off, the slaves, African Americans, and to fight each other. You go into the early 20th century in the labor movement, and you found that one of the best ways that that the corporate owners could fight against white laborers is to get them to oppose blacks and use racism. William Jennings Bryan, who was great for labor rights, at the same time was a big racist. And that's when Kansas and Nebraska, which used to be progressive states, Democratic states, now are so solidly Republican. I can give you 100 examples throughout history, not just in American history, through world history, the people in charge divide and conquer those that are out of power, get them to hate each other so no one focuses on the fact that who's pulling the strings. It's just the strings. And that's why I like Donald Trump, because Donald Trump is actually exposing the lie that has fueled the Republican Party for a long period of time. That's why I'm thanking him today.
Yeah, he's exposing it. I agree with you. And, you know, and we have to build a wall. We're all supposed to hate Hispanics. I mean,
right.
Like, this is ridiculous. I wanted to ask you why you were in the assembly.
Yeah.
We got through here in New York. We got single payer through the New York Assembly. Is there anybody, you or has anybody else presented a bill to try to get single payer in your state?
Well, first of all, congratulations. You did get through single payer through the New York Assembly. Has the governor signed it?
No, because we haven't gotten it through the Senate, which is controlled by Republicans.
That's, by the way, that's something I'd love to chat with you about maybe at length at another time, is how New York Senate manages to just...
Oh, why don't you introduce a bill in your state?
Well, I'd be happy to. Unfortunately, you're a lot closer to getting it done in New York than we are in Virginia. New York is a blue state. It's a solid blue state. The fact that you can't get your Senate blue shows, you know, there's a little bit of corruption there, I think. But once you get it blue, you should be able to do that. We are in Virginia a purple state. We're a purple state that somewhat leans blue. I mean, we voted for Obama in the past two elections, and all of our senator, both our senators and our governor, lieutenant governor, and attorney general are Democrats. So it's statewide issues, statewide elections. We tend to win 51-49. But unfortunately, the General Assembly in Virginia is controlled by Republicans, both Senate and the House of Delegates, where I sit.
All right.
So we can't even get Medicaid expansion, much less single payer. Through in Virginia. And in fact, in Virginia, and this is going to shock a lot of people from outside of Virginia, the hospitals agreed to pay for every single penny of everything the state had to pay because Republicans were saying, well, the state pays nothing now, but in 10 years, they'll have to pay up to 10%, which to me, paying 10% to get, you know, $3 billion is a pretty good deal. But so the hospital said, you know what? We don't want to treat people in emergency rooms that come in because they're too poor to pay and then everyone has to pay. It actually, we could pay hundreds of millions of dollars and we will save money rather than because you give someone heart medicine and they'll live and they won't need emergency heart bypass surgery, which costs $100,000, not to mention they cut your chest cavity open and so forth. So
yeah.
So it turned out it would cost the Republicans nothing in Virginia to have Medicaid expansion. And they still turned it down because they call it Obamacare. And even if it helps save the lives of thousands of Virginians and literally gives us hundreds of millions of dollars that Virginians have already paid for and gives $3 billion to our economy, it has Obama's name on it. So I suggested to Republicans that we call it the Republican Plan to Save Lives. And leave Obama's name out of it. Leave our governor, Terry McAuliffe's name out of it. And, you know, we'll let Republicans put it forward. I'll just quietly vote for it because it does save lives. It does save money. Even if you don't give a damn about lives and you're a fiscal conservative, it saves hundreds of millions of dollars. But apparently I couldn't convince any of them to do that. So to me, we got to get that before we even go to single payer. But I should tell you, I do support in principle single payer. I do think it works in countries all across the globe. I think it's definitely where we need to get to. A lot of people don't remember the debate when President Obama first proposed the Affordable Care Act. He originally tried Medicare for All. In fact, he was just going to lower it down from 65 to 55, but he couldn't get 60 Democrats to get over the filibuster. He got 57, I remember. But there was Lieberman was opposed to it and Ben Nelson in Nebraska. He just couldn't get to 60. So he couldn't get that done even when he had his, you know, as many Democrats as possible. Now obviously it's a lot harder.
Well, but if Americans need health care and they're in a foreign country, they're treated better than they are in our own country.
No question about it. You don't have to persuade me. You don't have to persuade me that it's clearly the right thing to do morally, ethically, as a matter of saving money. It's just politically, and we just don't have the votes. One of my real hopes, and that's why I really want Donald Trump to win the nomination, is that he will run and few Republicans will vote and we could take the Senate and maybe even take the House. And that, along with Hillary Clinton as president, actually get progress.
Bernie Sanders.
Okay, Hillary or Bernie, either one. I think, I mean, again, I'm a realist, and if you look at the delegate count, I think it's really, really hard for Bernie to catch up. But it doesn't matter who it is. Whether it's Bernie or Hillary, I will strongly support the Democratic nominee. I'm just hoping it's Donald Trump because I think that would be a very weak Republican nominee, and for good reason, because of all the things I've been talking about.
Yeah, but I think, like you said, I don't think he even wants the job, really.
I don't think he does. I think he's the dog who caught the car, right?
Exactly.
He loved to chase the car. He was sure it'd be good for his business. And, oh, my God, wait. What do I do? Abortion? I've never thought about abortion before. What do I do? So, hey, thanks for your call, Helen. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Let's go to Rod in New Jersey on line 3. Hey, Rod, how are you?
Yes, good afternoon, Mark. You know, glad to see you back on the air. So far,
glad to be back.
At any rate, I had a couple things I wanted to talk to you about.
Yeah.
The first thing, you were talking about Trump and basically that whole Republican field reminds me of the Omegas from Animal House, immature,
right.
Supercilious jerks, you know.
You know, it's I know it's embarrassing to them. It's when you look at Hillary and Bernie, for example, and they disagree really for all. It's always magnified in a primary. They actually disagree on very little. If you look at their Senate records, they voted the same way 93% of the time. But OK, so they disagree on 7%. They disagree. They do so respectfully. They don't call each other names. They don't refer to body parts. They don't attack each other's spouses. You know, they have a real debate on real issues. And then you look at the Republican Party, and I know kids at a playground that are play with each other better than these guys do. So I just think it reflects the tenor of their party.
Absolutely, yeah. Also, I've been looking into voter disenfranchisement recently, and I saw what happened in Florida in 2000.
Or you could look at Arizona in 2016.
Oh, yeah. And basically, it was an unholy mess to begin with, and there were a number of people who were disenfranchised who should not have
been. No question.
Okay, anyway, I'll try to be quick here, but, I mean, there's a lot to look into. Basically, there were a number of amendments violated, the 14th and 19th.
Rod, I don't know how much you know about 11th. My history, but I started in politics writing the brief to challenge the Florida electors in 2000. I was hired by the Congressional Black Caucus. You don't have to persuade me that Al Gore was elected president of the United States in 2000. I assure you, I have written and spoken on it for 16 years. So I don't need persuasion on it.
Okay, well, I understand that. I would just want to, you know, I would suggest that people read the Constitution and some of the works by the Founding Fathers, along with the article from the Palm Beach. I think it's the Palm Beach Post-Gazette. Is that the name of the paper down there?
I believe something like that.
But I was astonished and I was amazed at just how lousy the record-keeping was in Florida.
Yeah, and I wish I could say Florida was unusual, but unfortunately I think that's true in the vast majority of the states. And mm-hmm. I think that's and I think the Republicans want it that way. It's the same way they claim there's voter fraud when it doesn't exist. They want to disenfranchise as many people as possible. They want to disenfranchise poor people, the elderly. They want to disenfranchise really any Democratic voter they could get their hands on, immigrants, people who don't speak English well. And they want a system that is, you know, uncountable. I mean, you know, we have sophisticated computers that can handle look at what's in the Defense Department, and we can handle, you know, we could spy on everybody, the NSA, but we can't count votes? That's an adding machine. Of course we can. And mm-hmm. this is purposeful. And that's, again, the beauty of what Donald Trump exposes, this hypocrisy where they proffer one reason, but we all know the real reason. The real reason is they just don't like democracy. They just don't want to have people vote, because people vote means that the people are in charge. And really, the Republicans in power really don't like we the people very much. They want to do their best to stay in power. That's why they gerrymander the line to do everything else they do.
One thing interesting that I've noticed that has come up, and I'll try to be very brief here, but basically, now, under Florida law, felons can't vote.
Right.
And so they wanted to purge those people off the voter rolls. Now, under the section of the Constitution dealing with what states can do with respect to each other, I think Florida violated the law, because if a person committed a crime in another state, even if it was a felony, and they were pardoned by that state,
they should be okay.
I see it.
I'll tell you, this is tricky. I don't want to get too far off because I'm running up against a hard commercial break, but also I want to stick to Donald Trump. But I will tell you, the 14th Amendment, it's very complex, but basically does allow the state government to disenfranchise people. It was actually designed to disenfranchise the Southern rebels, believe it or not, after the Civil War. But it does allow it if they commit a crime. But I agree with you. If you commit a crime, you've been pardoned, then there should be no reason to keep you off the rolls. And frankly, it doesn't require them to do this for felons. And I'd like to end that because I think that's it's expressly designed to keep people from voting. So thanks for calling, Rod. I'm hitting that hard break, but I appreciate your calling. Keep calling and calling another time. This is Mark Levine, 886-533-7543. I've got some other callers on the line. I'll get to Joe in Phoenix and Reggie in Georgia after this. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Let's go to Joe in Phoenix on line four. Hey, Joe, how are you?
Hey, how's it going? I've been thinking this for a while. Has class supplanted race in America now? Because what explains Herman Cain, his popularity, Ben Carson's popularity?
I think Herman Cain and Ben Carson are the conservatives that want to say, hey, we're not really racist. They support them, I think, to pollsters, but they never seem to support them in the ballot. Now, I don't think Herman Cain or Ben Carson are any more or less intelligent than Donald Trump. I think they're all kind of wacky people who have crazy ideas. But I think that some conservative white folk want to say they supported the black guy. They tell the pollster that just to make them not look racist. And then when they come to the polls, you note that these guys never seem to go anywhere. So that's all I think about them. I don't think, unfortunately, that class has supplanted race. And I think the clearest example of that is Donald Trump supporters, who tend to be uneducated white working class people who, if they were voting their interests, would support Bernie Sanders, right? But their racism, their xenophobia, you know, they hate Muslims, they hate immigrants, they hate Latinos, they hate blacks, many of them are misogynist against women. And so Donald Trump's rhetoric appeals to them. And this idea that the ruling classes have used race instead of class is something that I'm trying to point out has been going on throughout American history for 200 years. And at least Donald Trump, thank you for making it clear, because I think it was hidden before. So thanks for your call, Joe. I got to move on because I want to catch Reggie before I end the broadcast. But I'll be back Wednesday if you want to call back and talk further. Reggie from Georgia, I saved the best for last because Reggie is a longtime caller. How are you, sir?
Just fine. Happy Monday to you, Mark Levine, and welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be back.
And unlike the other Mark, your voice is much more masculine than his.
I'm getting slammed over here.
Okay. I think he's referring to Mark Levin, not you,
oh,
Mark
good,
Romaldi.
Okay.
I don't think he's attacking you. I think
right.
You're okay.
Right.
Not that there's anything wrong with not having a masculine voice.
That's
just
true.
Want to get that very clear. But go ahead, Reggie.
Well, you know what else you should be thanking Donald Trump for exposing? The mainstream media and the radio talk show hosts. I'm talking about the conservative ones. Because
yeah.
The exact same ones who were initially going to vote for him are now turning against him. You know what I'm saying there, Mark?
Well, you know why? It's fascinating because Ted Cruz did this. Like, he didn't want to attack Donald Trump because he wanted his supporters. And the talk radio hosts, they all want Donald Trump supporters. Rush Limbaugh, for example, famously is said nice things about Donald Trump because everyone fears this. Let's face it, it's a good segment. It may well be half the Republican Party. I do think it's a small minority of Americans, but it is a strong part, probably half the Republican Party. Probably 20% of Americans are Trump supporters, which is a pretty large number. Again, 20% is a small number to win a national election, but it's a large number, and it's half the Republican Party. And they've been stoking this anger, Republicans have, for decades. And they got people really fired up, and they also have this magical thinking. Yes, we can end the deficit, and we can do so with massive tax cuts, and we can, you know, get rid of all our, well, we will beat ISIS and control the world, but we can do it without alliances, without NATO. And it's this magical thinking that this strong man will give you everything you want, even though it's absolutely impossible. And Republicans have been promising this impossibilities for so long. And now here comes Donald Trump. He's even more ridiculous, even more promising things that can't be done. And Republican Savage is like, wait a minute, he's stealing our thunder. And indeed he is. And so again, I am thankful for Donald Trump. And I know there are not many liberals who say that. I'm thankful for you too, Reggie, for calling in. I'm going to be on Monday and Wednesday every single day this week. So tune in next Wednesday at 3 p.m. for more of the Inside Scoop.